Turn up your volume. Because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast. The Sick Podcast. With Tony Marinaro.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast.
You're in the bomb!
Sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoint, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est la bonne chose! Et ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Stanley pour les Canadiens. Le match troisième de l'histoire.
You found the dogs! John, you found the dogs! He found the dogs!
And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. LaBee.TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground. Your premier gaming destination. It's gonna be sick.
Marinaro, the Sick Podcast on this Wednesday, March 27. It is 1 minute past 10 o'clock. And Craig Button from TSN, their hockey analyst and director of scouting, will join me in just a couple of minutes. Not before I talk to you about Energy Transportation Group, our partner and our sponsor, a leading full-service logistics provider serving all of North America. I'll also talk to you about LaBitTB, brewed in Quebec, a winner of a dozen international awards. LaBitTB offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. LaBitTB, embrace your true nature. Playground this Friday, March 29. Catch the spirit of Led Zeppelin with Black Dog, inspired by the early years of Led Zeppelin. Black Dog keeps alive the fire and improvisation of one of the greatest bands of all time. And on Saturday, the Freddie James Project is back at Playground. They will not let you sit down. Get ready to spend the night on the dance floor and party like it's 1999. Playground, your ultimate destination for entertainment, just over the Mercier Bridge, only minutes from downtown Montreal. Visit playground.ca. Enjoy the strip without the trip. There you have it. All right, okay. Laval Rocket lose by a score of 3-1 tonight in Utica. That's the bad news, but there's a lot of good news to talk about as far as the Montreal Canadiens are concerned, because their four-game road trip now is a thing of the past. And guess who was there to watch all four games live? And he's here to share his Montreal Canadiens thoughts and observations. Everyone knows how much I love talking to this gentleman, Craig Button. Good evening.
Good evening, Tony. How are you doing on this?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, it was nice. A nice four-game run with the Canadiens through Edmonton, Vancouver, Seattle, and Colorado on Tuesday night. So it was nice. It's nice to just follow them for a stretch and get a feel for their team. And, you know, they played a great game last Tuesday versus Edmonton. Probably deserved a better fate. You know, I thought Vancouver played a really smart game against Montreal on Thursday. But then Sunday and Tuesday, Montreal, full marks for the victories. And certainly, you know, I said this on the broadcast, Tony. It's great to talk about the development and the positives with the team individually and collectively, but you still got to go out and try to find ways to win games. And they did that against Seattle and against a very good team in Colorado. And, you know, 43 seconds in, you're going, uh-oh, here we go, McKinnon. Yeah. But they just stuck right in there and just kept hanging in there and doing what they needed to do. Montembeau was excellent. And they find a way to, you know, that flight home, you know, after the way they played Sunday, Tuesday, Marty on the plane back behind the bench. I think, you know, they weren't just flying high. They were feeling really good about their effort.
I got to tell you something. As someone who can be very critical at times, I think I'm pretty fair. I think I criticize when I need to criticize, and I think I give props when you know, when they're deserved. I'm very impressed. I'm very impressed because going into the game last night, they were 17 points out of a wild card spot with about 12 games to go. This team would have every reason to kind of like play out the season. Without trying to get hurt, not playing an overly physical game. You know the way it is. They already know when the last game of the season is, Craig. When teams don't make the playoffs, they're already talking with their girlfriend or their wife or their buddies, and they're already looking at whether the kids are in school, when they finish school. If they don't have kids, they're already looking at when they can get out of town, when they can get back home, when they're going on a vacation, when they're going on a cruise, when they're going on an all-inclusive, when they're going on a golfing trip with their buddies. They're already looking at all that, right? They are pretty, already probably know already what all their travel arrangements are. So you have every excuse not to be at your best. No one really expects you to win. It's a very difficult trip out west. Three of the four teams that you're playing against are very good. And, you know, most of the players on the team probably have solidified their contracts, you know, for the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years. They don't have to turn it on right now. And they picked up 5 out of a possible 8 points. They played one of their best games of the season, if not their best game, last night in Colorado. They played one of their best games of the season, if not their best game, in a losing effort last week, like you mentioned, in Edmonton. And last night, it seemed like they really wanted to win this one for Marty. You know, Martin McGuire of 98.5 FM was saying, he does the play-by-play on the radio, covering the Montreal Canadiens, of course, in French. He was at the hotel when in Colorado. He arrived at the same time as the players, obviously, and had a chance to see Marty St. Louis there in the lobby waiting for his team, surprising them because they didn't know he was going to be there. And supposedly, very emotional time, very emotional images. And it seems to me that group last night was like, you know what, our coach is back and we want to do this for you. I'm impressed, very impressed.
You should be impressed. And it goes all the way back. You know, Jeff Gorton comes in, he hires Kent Hughes, they hire Martin St. Louis. And they were very, very open about what the direction of this team was going to be, how they were going to look over the next number of years when they took over. But really, and Marty talked about this. He talked about, you know, keeping the spirits of the players high, keeping the spirit of the team high. And that isn't easy to do, as you just pointed out, Tony. You know, with respect to you're not playing, you're not going to be in the playoffs, and you know, nobody's expecting you to win against good teams. So it would be easy. I shouldn't say easy, but nobody would fault you. Like, again, even the game Tuesday night, McKinnon pops out there, you know, 43 seconds in, it's 1-0, and 9 seconds later, it's 1-1. And I think that it's great to have a response, but how quickly they responded, and then they just dug in. They dug in on the penalty kill. They dug in the middle of the ice. They didn't allow the Avalanche to have a run there with their speed. But with respect to Marty, I mean, like, you want to respect the game. And Marty has talked about the players, you know, trying to work in different areas. And there's times when Marty's been straightforward. He's been critical, deservedly so. This isn't all like they're not all just sitting around the campfire holding hands and playing their favorite folk songs. They're like, you got to get serious about being better, and you got to be serious about competing. And I think last night's victory, with Marty returning there, I think it was a reflection. I think it's a reflection of the respect they have for him and what he has instilled in this group.
Craig, I mentioned earlier today on BPM Sports Radio en Français and TVA Sports Television en Français aussi that, you know, no team is a 10-on-10. No coach is a 10-on-10. No players are 10-on-10. No organization is a 10-on-10. Not every move is a 10-on-10. But if you listen to what the Montreal Canadiens said their plan was, what Jeff Gorton said his plan was before hiring Kent Hughes, what Kent Hughes said his plan was once he got hired, what Marty St. Louis said his plan was once Gorton and Hughes hired him, they talked about building a culture. They talked about not going to win every game, but we're going to try to win every game. They talked about progressing as individuals, as a group, as a team. They talked about player development. They talked about getting better. They talked about growing. And I need you to think about this for a second, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, and please let me know if you disagree. Nick Suzuki is a better player today than he was when the season started or last season. Cole Caulfield is a more all-round player right now than he was a year ago. Juraj Slafkovský is obviously much better than he was a year ago. Huge steps taken. Caden Gooley's better. Samuel Montembeau is better. Caden Primo is better. Alex Newhook is better right now with the Canadians than he was with the Colorado Avalanche. You have depth defensemen like Jack Guy and Struble who are better now than they were a year ago. You have veterans like Mike Matheson and Yoel Armia who are better now than they were a year ago. They're getting better, Craig. They're pulling it off.
Well, a lot of people talk about culture, and they talk about how they want to create a culture. But the Montreal Canadiens under Jeff Gorton, Kent Hughes, and Marty St. Louis, they are practicing the culture. They're walking the walk. And, you know, Nick Suzuki, I totally agree with everything you just said. I agree with every single thing you just said. Nick Suzuki is a better player now than he was 3 months ago. Cole Caulfield, it's amazing to me, Tony, how many people, geez, Cole Caulfield's struggling this year. I said, obviously, I say this to everybody. I said, you know, obviously you haven't watched the Montreal Canadiens very much because Cole Caulfield hasn't struggled. And, you know, Yoel Armia is a perfect example of what I just talked about with Marty St. Louis and Kent Hughes. So here's what we need you to do. Here's what we think you're really good at. Yoel Armia wasn't doing it. So they said, you're going to Laval. That's as simple as that. You're going to Laval. And if you want to get back here, you better get these areas of your game stronger. Well, give Yoel Armia a lot of credit because he went down, he played, he got the recall, and he's been a good player for the Montreal Canadiens. He's been a good player. And that's part of the culture too. It's not just saying, hey, we're all going to be positive. There comes times when what you're doing isn't good enough. And we're going to work with you and we're going to develop you. But sometimes, you know, the parts of things are going to be a little bit tougher for a player than he's Arbor Jack Guy. No, you're going down to the minors. We need you to work on a few things. He's come back, I think, like just in the time he's come back from Laval, he's a better player. So to your point, 100% agree with all of it.
Yeah. Cole Caulfield's shooting percentage is down. Hence, he scored less goals. Nick Suzuki's shooting percentage is up. He scored more goals. One of the things a lot of people have to think about too or consider, maybe a couple of things. A, Cole Caulfield's shot, he is coming off of shoulder surgery. Number two, coming off that surgery, you would think that early on in the season and maybe at, you know, you're still a little careful with the shoulder. You're a little tentative. Not only are you probably not shooting the puck the way you did before the surgery, but you're probably tentative to go into the corners. You're probably tentative to go to the front of the net. You're probably tentative to make some kind of contact. And usually when players come back from injuries, no matter what kind of injury it is, sometimes it takes about a good year before you start feeling like yourself again and comfortable. But I will say this. Marty St. Louis said he was going to work on making Cole Caulfield a better player, which is really important because, you know, you're not going to score all the time. Sometimes you're going to run into hot goalies. Sometimes you're going to get snake bitten. You're going to have your round of bad luck. And if you don't know how to do other things, well, at that point, you're not helping your hockey team. So what did Marty want to do? You know what? Now, I want to make this guy an all-around player. Make him more of a 200-foot player. Make him more of a smarter player. Make him more of a versatile player. Cole Caulfield is on his way to picking up 40 assists in a season. And when he does, he'll be the first winger the Canadians have had to do that since Alex Kovalev. That's a pretty impressive stat.
Yes, it is. Well, think about it this way, too. So Cole's an elite goal scorer. Every single team in the league knows he's an elite goal scorer. So you're going to try to take away the goal scoring of Cole Caulfield. So if that's your only thing that you can do, well, guess what? Now you're going to be in a whole lot of trouble because if you don't score, you're not helping the team. And that is where Cole's game has developed so nicely, and where Marty St. Louis' guidance and has come in here and saying, listen, like, you're not going to score every game. You're a good goal scorer, but if you're not scoring, you can do more in the game. And Cole has done exactly that. But when you've been the best goal scorer all the way up, he was the best goal scorer all the way up, and nobody could stop him, what are you going to do, tell him to stop scoring? I think that Cole embracing an all-around game, I think Marty St. Louis recognizing that if he didn't score, there was more there, was really important. Tony, I know you know the book, The Game by Ken Dryden. And he was talking about Bob Gainey. And he was, we know how effusive in his praise Ken was for Bob. But the line that always stood out for me, he said, in a league of do-nothing 20 goal scorers, Bob was so valuable. And just because he didn't score 20 didn't lessen his value. So Cole Caulfield had a choice here. Be a do-nothing 20 goal scorer or be an all-round 20 goal scorer. And an all-around 20 goal scorer, Cole's going to score 30. Cole's going to score 35 again. There's no question he can't because he's too good. But now his game is more well-rounded, and he's not going to be a do-nothing 20 goal scorer.
By the way, if you're wondering about those 40 assists, which we talked about, he's at 35 assists with 11 games to go, and I would put my money on him picking up 5 more assists in the final 11 games of the season. You talked about Bob Gainey. Didn't Viktor Tikhonov one time say that when it came to hockey, he thought that Bob Gainey was the most complete hockey player in the world? Remember that?
I sure do. Well, yeah. I mean, that's the praise of, you know, we look at the stat sheet. And listen, when you're a gifted offensive player, you got to produce offensively. But there's so many other things that a player is capable of doing in the game. Bob exemplified that. Tikhonov gave him the shout-out.
Now, speaking of the number 40, last night, Juraj Slafkovský hit 40 points. 40 points for Juraj Slafkovský, beating Mario Tremblay's 39 points, which Mario Tremblay had in the 74-75 season. Mario Tremblay was the teenager who picked up the most points in Montreal Canadiens history. Well, Tremblay's 39 points has now been passed by Slafkovský's 40 points. Your thoughts?
I think you're right. It's been witnessing his development right in front of everybody's eyes has been so impressive. And, you know, I know, Tony, that, you know, at times, you know, I felt that going to the minors might have been the best move for him. But, you know, the Montreal Canadiens felt, and knowing the player is really key here, and they knew the player. And knowing him becomes key, but they felt that, no, he's going to be here. We think this is what's best for him. We talked about Marty St. Louis. Part of development of a player, too, is not just working with him. We've talked about Juraj working on his shot. We've talked about different areas. But when Marty put him on the power play to get him puck touches, then he put him on that line with Suzuki and Caulfield, all with the idea there was development going on here. And that development of building confidence in Juraj and seeing how he could handle it. He's handled it magnificently, I think. And the understanding the game is slowing down for him and his impact is becoming greater. We know what a big man he is on the ice, but everything you're watching now in the game, there's just so much that you're seeing his confidence level go up. You're watching him impact the game in so many different ways. And it's not accidental. It's not accidental. There's real purpose to the way Juraj Slafkovský plays, and his development has been like beyond impressive.
All right, so let's talk about those 40 points now. I saw a graphic up earlier today. Same age, outproducing Mikko Rantanen of the Colorado Avalanche when Rantanen was 19. That's the player that when Slafkovský was asked at the draft, who's your comparable in the National Hockey League? He said, Mikko Rantanen. And a lot of people said, if he could be Mikko Rantanen, who picks up over 90 points a season and has for the last several seasons playing on the first line with Nathan MacKinnon, well, then this guy definitely is going to be the best player in the draft. That stat blows me away. Like, he's got more points as a 19-year-old than Rantanen did.
Well, and again, everybody progresses at different rates. And certainly, you know, Juraj has taken those steps and taken steps forward in a forceful way. Mikko Rantanen is a superstar. He's a superstar. 50-plus goals, 100 points, kills penalties, great on the power play. He's an impact player. So, if that is the player that Juraj Slafkovský wants to pattern his game off, with the size that Slafkovský has, with the drive that Slafkovský has, keep trying to come close to Rantanen, because that's a great player to try to be like.
Alex Newhook picked up an assist on the game-winning goal last night in Colorado versus his former team. He played wing. He played center. They still don't know where he's going to play next year. A lot of people have been wondering, can he end up being a top six? We've already talked about it, that if he's your third line centerman, that's when you know that the team will be deep enough to really, really go far in the playoffs. He was over 63% in the faceoff circle during these four games. He's been on fire ever since he came back from that injury where he was off for almost 3 months. He does a great job in the bumper position. He's really lessened the absence of Monahan after being traded to the Winnipeg Jets. Your thoughts on him?
He's another player that you're watching develop, and they're being patient with him developing as a center. You know, they have him as a winger, then they put him back in the middle of the ice. And, you know, down the stretch here to the end of the season, he's going to be a center. And you're seeing him take those steps. You talk about the bumper position. That's a hard spot to play in. And you can see that Alex is becoming more comfortable in that bumper position. But I like him in the middle of the ice. I think that in the middle of the ice, he's got more room to operate. He doesn't get stuck on the wall in battles. He can use his skating and his quickness and his skill in the open ice. And yes, you have to be above the puck on the defensive side of things, and then understand where you can use your speed and your skills to make an impact. He could have had three goals last night against Colorado. He had the two against Seattle. I thought for sure that one that went off the post crossbar was his third one of the game. I mean, yeah, like, so, you know, Anderson made some great saves on Newhook last night. And the way he's getting those chances and the way he's getting open and the way he's carrying himself in the center ice position, just another example of they trade for him. They said, you know, we're going to trade a first-round draft pick for this for him. Colorado's looking to get a little bit younger, trying to manage your cap. Now Montreal can take advantage, and take advantage they have. Every team is going to be in a different situation at different points in time. What you have to do is be aware, and Montreal certainly was about Alex Newhook, then have whatever the assets are, whether they be a draft pick, whether they be prospects, that to be able to execute on those trades. Montreal was able to do that. They did it with Kirby Dach. They did it with Alex Newhook. They're going to do it again, Tony. They're going to do it again because they have shown a penchant and a real real awareness of what type of player they want to get at what age when they're making these types of moves. And having them grow together, having them come up and grow together, mm-hmm. Suzuki and Caulfield, Newhook, yeah. Kirby Dach and Slafkovský. Now they're going to grow together, and I think that becomes really, really important for the Montreal Canadiens.
In the last 4 years, 4 years ago, Samuel Montembeau, AHL goaltender. A little bit after that. Good enough to get called up and play some games as a number three in the National Hockey League when one goalie's hurt for the Florida Panthers. After that, though, not good enough to stay with the team. He's going on waivers. Picked up by the Montreal Canadiens, looks like an AHL goaltender. No, then after that, looks like an NHL goaltender. But he's a number two, and on some teams, he's a number three. Then after that, he's a number two. Then after that, he outplays Jake Allen. Then after that, they're still not willing to say he's a number one because it's a small sample size. And maybe there's a respect thing for Jake Allen. Then after that, okay, he won the number one job in Montreal, but on other teams in the National Hockey League, he's not a number one. Then after that, no, he's a number one, but not on any of the best teams in the National Hockey League. Then after that, he's a top 20 goaltender in the National Hockey League. And now others are saying, hold on a second. I think he's even better than that. You've had a chance to see him. Are you ready to say that he is legit? When I say legit, I mean that he's in that top 12 to 15 and can probably enter the top 10. Are you not willing to go that far just yet? Look into your crystal ball. Put on your scouting hat. What do you see from Samuel Montembeau?
Kenny Holland said this to me many, many years ago. He said, everybody knows who the top five goaltenders in the league are, year in, year out. And, you know, we could probably look at them and say, okay, here's the top five goaltenders in the league. He says, there's years where one of those guys in the top five doesn't play very well. Somebody else slips into the top five. Then he says, after that, there's 10 goaltenders that are really good. And there's times when sometimes they're, and one of them might get to the top five, two of them might get to the top five. But that next 10 group of goaltenders are really good, solid number ones. So following on the Ken Holland philosophy and assessing goaltenders, I see Samuel Montembeau at in the next 10. So that puts him 6 to 15. Right where you talked about. When you look at Samuel Montembeau and the way he has taken his game and raised the level of his game year in, year out, he was a third round draft pick. You draft a goaltender in the third round, it's not like you don't think he's got potential. You know he's going to need some time. You know he's going to need a little bit of, you're going to need patience with him. And that's what's happened here with Samuel Montembeau. And Samuel Montembeau has pushed himself. Carlo Koliakovo has him on the Olympic team in 2026. He won a world championship gold medal for Team Canada. So I think that dismissing Samuel Montembeau as a top 15 goaltender in the league, and just as I outlined it with the 6 to 10, how Kenny Holland talked about it, that's how I see Samuel Montembeau. And that's a good goaltender.
Where do you have him? This discussion of the Olympics and all that, so is he in that conversation for you?
Well, I think he has to be now because there's no clear-cut goaltender right now for Canada. And by clear-cut, I mean, it used to be clear-cut. It was Patrick Waugh. It was Marty Brodeur. It was Roberto Luongo. It was Carey Price. Like, it was clear-cut, right? There's no clear-cut guy anymore. We can talk about Aiden Hill and Jordan Binnington, but I think when you look at Binnington, you look at Aiden Hill, you look at Stuart Skinner, Samuel Montembeau, the Canadian goaltenders, well, just tell me who else deserves to be in that conversation. I think he absolutely belongs in the conversation for Canada's Olympic team. And certainly when you see what he did at the World Championships and the success he had, now you see him continuing to build his game. To me, you can't dismiss a player like Samuel Montembeau. You just can't.
If you take a look at what the Canadians are doing with the goaltending position, you take a look at Montembeau, you take a look at Primo, you take a look at Jacob Fowler, you take a look at Dobesh down on the farm, you take a look at some other kids that they drafted. I'm not going to tell you that they're assembling a goalie prospect pool or a goalie pool the way they have on defense, because on defense, I think they're extremely deep. But they're very deep in goal. 3 years from now, the Canadians can have four number one goalies in the organization.
They could, but they won't, because no team
won't.
Four number one goalies, right?
Correct.
No, I know what you're saying.
What I'm trying to say, though, they're gonna have to move some of them, and they'll probably go on and have a crack somewhere else.
Ken Dryden came in, and that was when they had Rogie Vachon and Phil Mir. and Rogie Vachon and Phil Mir have been part of Stanley Cup teams. So, you know, so Ken Dryden comes in and says, well, I'm the number one now. Right. And you look at it. Right. And that's just the way it goes. I mean, Steve Penny, who had that fantastic run with the Montreal Canadiens back in the 80s. I mean, at one point in time, he came out of seemingly nowhere, performs at a level. And, you know, there was kind of like, oh, well, maybe there was something there. And then Patrick Roy came along and, you know, unfortunately for Steve Penny, he really never got another chance to show what he was capable of with the Canadiens. Having too many players, what I should say is this. There is never a problem having too many good players. I have never heard a coach or a manager in the National Hockey League complain about having too many good players. So if they end up with four goaltenders that have the capability to be number ones and they have defenders that can play in the National Hockey League and forwards, that is a good thing to have. I've said this. I think their prospect pool is excellent. I think the shelves are well stocked. They're not all going to play for the Montreal Canadiens. That's the reality. Because it's not because you don't like them or you don't want them. There's just not going to be room for all of them. And that's a great reflection on the scouting staff.
The Sick Podcast is brought to you in part by Accent Insurance Solutions. You know, all insurance isn't created equal, and you know where to find the right solution for you. That's Accent Insurance. Accent doesn't sell insurance. They shop insurance for you to find the right product right on the money. Whatever your insurance needs, home, automobile, or business, call the Accent team today at 514-363-3636. As a matter of fact, I have a Zoom call scheduled with one of their representatives tomorrow morning at 10:30 regarding my insurance. All right, okay. I know you're the president of the Nick Suzuki fan club, and I want to let you know that you're not alone because I'd also like to be the president of that fan club. During this trip, we had a chance to see him go up against some great hockey players with the Oilers, with the Canucks, with the Colorado Avalanche, head-to-head with McDavid, head-to-head with McKinnon, head-to-head with, you know, Elias Pettersson. The list goes on and on. He didn't skip a beat. He never looked intimidated. He never looked like out of place. He never looked outmatched. As a matter of fact, he looked like he can go toe-to-toe with these guys. I'm not saying he's them, by the way. So before I come, you know, the headlines come out tomorrow, Marinaro says he's better than McDavid or McKinnon. Obviously, he's not. But on any given night, he can play with these guys. What did you think?
Well, I mean, you're right about how good Nick Suzuki is. Well, let me go back a little bit in time, and let me take you back in time to Guy Garbineau. When the Montreal Canadiens were a really good team, did Montreal have any issues matching up Guy Garbineau against any other team's best players?
No. Michel Bergeron used to play Peter Stastny 22 and 23 minutes a game, and you know what? The Canadiens didn't care because they just put Garbineau out against them.
That's the point we're making. Like, you need the team game. The team game is one where you look at, okay, is Nick Suzuki as dynamic as McDavid or McKinnon or Elias Pettersson? No, he isn't. Nobody would suggest that. But in a game where you need to be able to match up and you need to play. And it's not just there's nothing that comes up on the board and says, you know, Nathan McKinnon skated faster than Nick Suzuki tonight, like 97% of the time. So, you know, Colorado's going to get an extra point for that. There's nothing like that. It comes down to how do you play the game and how do you manage the game? Nick Suzuki is brilliant. He's an Einstein out on the ice. So when you watch him play, and Guy Garbineau was frustrating for a good player's opponents to play against because Guy Garbineau was always in the right place. Guy Garbineau was always there, and he was a competitor. Nick Suzuki's always in the right place, and he's a competitor. Like Nathan McKinnon and Connor McDavid and Elias Pettersson, they don't get these matchups on a regular basis. They don't get to match up against an elite player. And Nick Suzuki's elite, just like Patrice Bergeron was elite. And it was no fun for anybody to play against Patrice Bergeron. just like it's no fun to play against Nick Suzuki. So when you watch him match up and he's in the right places, the right time, reading the play, understands where to be, and he's got good skills. Don't get me wrong here. Nick Suzuki is a premier. He's a premier center in the National Hockey League. We've had this discussion about, is he a number one? Give me a break. Is he a number one? Anybody that suggests that he's not a number one, give me a break.
Carbonell was so frustrating to play against. He used to follow guys around and stick to them. You know when they say the coaches of the 80s or 90s, I'm talking about amateur coaches, by the way, would say, you know, you watch that best player on the other team, and if he goes to the bathroom, I want you to follow him to the bathroom. Carbonell used to be like that. By the way, quick story for those who are watching will remember this. For those who weren't around or were too young, 1993 Stanley Cup final, Jacques Demers says, you know what? I'm going to put Kirk Muller up against Wayne Gretzky and the Los Angeles Kings. One of Muller's best friends in hockey, by the way, is Wayne Gretzky and a couple of Kingston boys. And is Gretzky a Kingston boy? I think so.
Brantford,
is he? Brantford, pardon me.
Dougie Gilmore's
the other Kingston boy, correct. Yeah. Which it could have been. It could have been Muller going up against Gilmore, of course, the Los Angeles Kings beat the Toronto Maple Leafs in Game 7 in Toronto. Gretzky scored the game-winning goal in Los Angeles in Game 6 and in overtime. And then in Game 7, Wayne Gretzky scored a hat-trick to beat the Toronto Maple Leafs. Anyway, long story short, Jacques Demers says, okay, you know what, Kirk, you're going to watch Wayne Gretzky. Gretzky picks up a couple of points. If memory serves me well, he's the first star of the game in a 4-1 Los Angeles Kings win. Next day, Guy Carbonneau stands up and says, give me Gretzky. Let Kirk take care of the offense. I'll shut Gretzky down. Montreal Canadiens win the next four games and win the Stanley Cup. So good Guy Carbonneau was.
Well, not only how good he was, but also like him standing up, that's Guy. No, Jacques, I got Wayne. We were playing the Colorado Avalanche. I want to say it was 1999. And Peter Forsberg in game one just wreaked havoc on us. He wreaked havoc on us. Like when coaches literally throw their arms up and just kind of go, like, what do we do next? So Bob was talking to our coaches, Ken Hitchcock, Doug Jarvis, and Rick Wilson. He said, Put Carbonell against him. Carbonell's really smart. Carbonell will know how to play off of him, and he'll know how to frustrate him. And he was magnificent. So Ken Hitchcock, he's all excited now. So game three, we go into Colorado, and we got Carbonell against Forsberg. And Bob says, yeah, don't play him against Forsberg tonight. And Hitch does like his head spins around about seven times. What do you mean don't put Carbonell against him? He said, Forsberg is too good. He knows exactly now what he's going to try to do. And where Guy's at in his career, you know, Forsberg physically could get the better of him. And Ken is going, and this is the first time I heard this story. 1976 Stanley Cup final. Scotty Bowman used four centers against Bobby Clark. And he had Lemaire, Mahovlich, Jarvis, and Risebrow. And Bob was telling the story to Hitch. He goes, Scotty's feeling was Bobby Clark was too good. He was too good. You had to mix it up with him. You had to keep him off balance. And you had to keep throwing different looks at him. Because once Bobby zeroed in on what he needed to do, he was too good for players. But keeping him off balance. And that's what Guy Carbonneau did. He kept people off balance. Peter Stastny, great player. You know, you talk about 93 and everything that went with it. You go back to those Boston days, like those good Boston teams. There was really good players. I mean, go back. Like Carbonell played against Trottier and all those players. Like he was so good. And to me, good top players are frustrated. It's like because they can't shake the Carbonneaus, the Suzukis, the Bergerons, they can't shake them.
Geez, in 99, Carbonneau would have been 39 years old.
Yep. And I'll tell you, but same thing. Give it to me. Give me the responsibility.
Yeah, that's really something. All right, okay. You had a chance to see Mike Matheson score a highlight reel goal. We're going to have a chance to talk about this over the next couple of years. here's a West Islander who was drafted by the Florida Panthers, then traded to the Pittsburgh Penguins, acquired by the Montreal Canadiens, who wanted to come to Montreal, embraced Montreal, and has played the best hockey of his career in Montreal. A lot of people look at all the young prospects the Canadiens have. Lane Hutson, Logan Mailloux, David Reinbacher. Talk about some of the young defensemen that are either with the Rocket now, like also like Justin Barron, or take a look at Jack Guy and Struble and Caden Gooley, of course. And for them all to play here, Matheson will have to move on, Savard will have to move on, and all that stuff. But every team that wins the Stanley Cup, they usually have a defenseman in his mid-30s. And Mike Matheson is not 30 yet. At least I don't think so. I have to check his age. But
he's a 19. He's a 1994 birthday, year of birth. I don't know if he has turned 30 or not. But he will this year if he hasn't already.
He just turned 30, okay? So there you go. Thank you, HockeyDB, for that. Mike Matheson turned 30 actually 1 month ago today, okay? So let's just say the Montreal Canadiens are a cup contender in 4 or 5 years. Matheson would be 34 or 35. You take a look at teams that have won the Stanley Cup, a lot of them have had defensemen who are 34 or 35. Have you already decided if Mike Matheson will be on the Montreal Canadiens after his existing contract, in your opinion?
Well, I don't think you have to make that decision now, Tony. I mean, who knows where Mike Matheson's going to be at in his game in 2 years or 3 years or 4 years' time. What I can tell you is this right now about Michael Matheson. He's on top of his game. He's fourth in time on ice a game for all players in the NHL, penalty killing, power play. Like, he gets the hard matchups. I mean, last night, I mean, against Colorado, I mean, he's up on the play. He's taking the space and the time away from their top players and playing magnificently. So what I would say, I'll say a couple things about this. He's a great skater. He shows no fall off in his skating. Like, I'm not worried about his age. Nick Lidstrom won a Norris Trophy at 40. I'm not worried about it. Chris Pronger and these guys, Alex Pietrangelo, I mean, he won a Stanley Cup last year. There's no problem if you can play. Drew Doughty's playing excellent hockey for the LA Kings. And then this is my second thing. We talk about all the young defensemen. Well, let me just add something else in there. I heard a number like a trade deadline. Oh, Mike Matheson might be available. If I was a manager on another team, I'd be phoning Kent Hughes every single day if this is true, to try to find out what it costs to get Michael Matheson. Great contract, all the hard minutes he plays and what he contributes, I'd be all over him if I was another manager. I don't know if that was true. I'm not here, but obviously he's still there. So here's where I'm going to finish, Tony. You know, the Montreal Canadiens back in the 70s, they had lots of good young defensemen. Mm-hmm. You know what's interesting, though? Savard, Robinson, and Lapointe never went anywhere. Engblom did. Langway did. But those three key guys never went anywhere. If you want to go trade key players on your team, you're going to fall back. Michael Matheson is their best defender. He's a key player on the team. Until he shows me otherwise that he's not, I'm not like some of those young defenders. You better come and show me that you can even touch Mike Matheson, let alone surpass him.
Yeah. By the way, that Montreal Canadiens team that won the Stanley Cup in 1986, you know how old Larry Robinson was? He was 35 years old.
Yep.
He's 35 years old. Like, I find, you know, every team I think needs, you talked about Lidstrom being 40. Now, Lidstrom obviously was an incredible class. I don't even know how many times he won the Norris. That's how many times he won it. But I just think, look, if I were to answer today, I would say to you that I think Matheson will be traded, you know, and his contract won't be renewed. He's got another 2 years on his deal after this year. But they play the heck out of him. But if they could play him less minutes, this guy could have a lot of longevity to his career. This guy could be one of those guys that can play until about 38 with the way he moves. If they monitor his minutes this season, I think he just got way too many minutes.
Well, okay. So, I mean, they had injuries. They have some different players. He's excelled playing all those minutes. Like,
yeah, that's true.
I'm going to be very clear about Michael Matheson. If you're just going to go trade him for the sake of trading him, keep watching what he does. Keep watching where his game is at. Keep seeing where his like, if there's any areas of his game where Alex Pietrangelo won the Stanley Cup last year. 33 years old. Michael Matheson is a really good player. If you're just going to trade him and you want to just thrust the young guys in there, go ahead. But I'll tell you this right now, in 2 years' time,
yeah,
Logan Mailloux, David Reinbacher, Lane Hudson will be incapable of doing what Mike Matheson does right now, because they won't be ready to do that. Their development will still be ongoing. They will not be able to do in 2 years' time what Mike Matheson is doing right now. And you can, yeah, that's a quote board. That's a quote board.
So in 2 years' time, Hudson, Reinbacher, and Mailloux won't be able to do what Matheson is doing right now.
Nope.
Well, that'll make sense, because they're both, you know, they're going to be in their first or second years in the National Hockey League. And Mike Matheson's been in the league for about a decade, right? So he's kind of mastered his position right now. Look, he's got his weaknesses. Everyone knows what they are. But he's also got his strengths. I mean, you talked about his skating, his acceleration. I think his sense of anticipation is incredible. He's a heck of a hockey player for sure. All right, okay. Who disappointed you?
Imagine this, yeah, Tony. Just take this take back. The Pittsburgh Penguins go and trade for Erik Karlsson. Erik Karlsson is a fabulous player. Like, he's got everything you want in a player offensively. He's going to the Hall of Fame. So the Pittsburgh Penguins, they had Michael Matheson and they had John Marino. They could still have those two guys. They'd be a better team, the Pittsburgh Penguins. But they go on, like, let Matheson out of their fold after they had traded for him, and John Marino. You want to know how you fall back in the standings? Make trades like that.
Yeah. Yeah, those were dumb trades for sure. Man, were they dumb trades. But anyway. Hey, who disappointed you on this trip?
You know, it's when a team gets, you know, like what they did in Edmonton, what they did in Seattle, obviously what they did in Denver. It's hard to really start pinpointing and saying, well, this player disappointed you or not. Now, the way I'm going to answer this is, like, and chances that happen and penalties that get drawn. But Josh Anderson, I like you talked about earlier in the year or at the end of the year, players have – Josh Anderson probably can't wait for this year to end, just so he can put it behind him, put it on the shelf somewhere, way in the back area of your shelf, and just try to focus in on coming back next year and being the player that I think he's capable of being. And, you know, I thought he had some good stretches of play in the four games that I was doing the broadcast. But I think all in all, you know, you look at chances that he gets, you know, the giveaway to McDavid in the game versus Edmonton, like, his whole year has been disappointing. And I think for me, that's the player you just, like, for him, he just wants to get this year in the rearview mirror for himself.
All right. Okay. Bobby said Kyle Dubas, laugh out loud. No, it's Ron Hextall. Is it not? Who traded John Marino and Mike Matheson. It was Ron Hextall.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like,
yeah.
And Kyle traded for Eric, but I'm not knocking Erik Karlsson. I was just saying, yeah, you wouldn't have had to
Kyle
trade for Erik
Karlsson. Yeah, 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 yeah. No, you're right about that. You're right about that. Okay, I think we'll finish it off with this. I think we have to talk about it because Zach Hyman was trending on Twitter last night, even before he scored the overtime winning goal. I think you know where I'm going with this. Do you know where I'm going with this?
I know why it was trending. I know what happened. I know the whole story. So go ahead.
Okay. Would you like to tackle it? Because I have the video that I can play for those who missed it.
Yeah, no problem. Would you like to tackle it? Yeah, no problem. All right.
Okay. So here's Andrew Berkshire, who I think writes for a website or two and does some podcast work and has over the past couple of years. He sent out a video yesterday. Now, before we play it, just to put things in context of how much reaction this got, Andrew has, I don't know, I think a following of about 25,000 people or something like that. I don't have it in front of me, but I think I saw something like that. The video, the last time I checked, got about 6.5 million views. So this thing went viral. He was trending. Everybody in the hockey world, it seems, weighed in on this, commented. And unfortunately for him, there's not too many people who agreed with what he had to say. This is what he said.
This might make some people upset, but miss me with the Zach Hyman story right now. Listen, I've been in the media industry since around 2012, maybe a little bit longer than that, but professionally since 2012. And frankly, it's not just about hockey. It's not just about sports. Our media industry has to do a better job of telling truthful stories, all right? And listen, Zach Hyman scored 50 goals at age 31. Fantastic accomplishment. Incredible. But the story that's being sold right now and repeated ad nauseum all over media is that, you know, if you work hard, if you stick to it, you can get there too. 31-year-old guy finally hit the 50-goal mark. Hard worker, all that. Yeah, great. Except you're missing the part of the story where Zach Hyman grew up insanely rich, where his parents bought an entire league to guarantee him playing time, where he did exclusive training that only a rich person could perform, or sorry, that only a rich person could afford with, you know, professional athletes his whole life. His whole life. This is a person who has had every single possible advantage to get where they are today. And by the way, on top of that, got extraordinarily lucky once making the league and has spent almost the entirety of his NHL career playing shotgun next to Austin Matthews or Connor McDavid. Objectively, inarguably, the two best players in the sport right now for his whole career. Now, none of that takes away the fact that he scored 50 goals. He scored 50 goals. It's not going away. Zach Hyman is a hard worker, right? You can see it on the ice. He goes into spots that are hard to get to, that you take a beating to get to. But let's be real here. Hard work, stick-to-itiveness, that isn't the story. The story is if you have that stuff and you have every possible opportunity, every possible lucky break, every possible financial consideration, then maybe your hard work will get to you to where Zach Hyman got. It's not about just working hard. And this is not just hockey. It's not just sports. This is everything. Working hard, everybody works hard. You think every NHLer didn't get there by working hard? You think every NBA player didn't get there by working hard? Talent, of course. But you can't have elite talent without working hard, at least in some way. Not all of them will work hard the same way. But Zach Hyman, let's be real here, is a hardworking player, hard-nosed player, who goes to one space on the ice, for the most part offensively, and he contributes in one specific way. That specific way at the net front happens to mesh extremely well with hyper elite generational players to become a complementary piece on a top line. He's not a guy that drives a line. He's not a 50 goal scorer in the same way that a guy like Austin Matthews is a 50 goal scorer. He's a 50 goal scorer in the right situation with the right line mates. Not everybody who is Zach Hyman's talent could fold himself into that role and execute it as well as Zach Hyman does, and he absolutely deserves credit for that. But let's not build this stupid narrative of work hard, you'll succeed. It's just not true. It's just not true. There are people who've worked as hard as Zach Hyman their entire lives and never got a sniff of the American Hockey League, let alone the NHL, because they didn't have the advantages that he had, or something went wrong in their career that didn't go wrong for his. So yes, congratulations to Zach Hyman on your 50 goals, but I'm sorry, the narrative you're selling and that the media is selling around it, miss me with that. It's bullshit.
Whoa.
Well, I
mean, speechless or what?
No, I'm not speechless. I mean, but I guess my big question here would be like, what led him to want to go on this rant about Zach Hyman? Like, what was the purpose of it? Is there, I mean, we all know, I mean, I know Stu Hyman. I know Stu Hyman's very wealthy, but he's not the only wealthy person that's been involved in minor hockey. He's not the only wealthy person that's been involved in sports. And certainly it, like, yes, you know, we look at the sport and we see that given opportunities, you know, might advance you and might allow you some opportunities when you're younger. Zach Hyman's in the National Hockey League because he deserves to be in the National Hockey League. Zach Hyman is playing in the National Hockey League because the National Hockey League is about success and it's about having talent. And I'll be very straight. There's a lot of players that are really talented that don't work hard in the National Hockey League, but they have talent.
Yeah.
I'll share a quick story with you. Years ago, I was at the Minnesota North Stars, and we were having a discussion about, oh yeah, kids that come from the, from blue collar families, you know, they might have a better success than kids that come from more well-to-do families. Well, I was living in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Bill Laimbeer, I don't know if you remember Bill Laimbeer. Bill Laimbeer was playing for the Detroit Pistons, and he was like an unbelievable competitive warrior. And so I'm wrestling with this idea in my head, and Digger Phelps was the coach. He coached Bill Laimbeer at Notre Dame. So Digger was doing broadcasts. I ended up connecting with him. And I asked Digger, I said, is this true? Like, you know, kids that don't come from as well-to-do families have a better chance to make it in pro sports. He says, let me tell you something, Craig. He goes, Bill Laimbeer was probably in his sixth year in the NBA before he made as much money as his dad. His dad was an executive at an aerospace company. He said, the house, they looked over the ocean. He goes, I first saw Bill Laimbeer as a junior in high school. He was diving for balls and diving for this and just as viciously competitive then as he is now. He said, I've gone to some of the poorest neighborhoods in the United States and watched some very talented kids. And he says, they weren't going to make it. They weren't going to make it. They were talented and they were gifted. So if that held true, he goes, I would have never had to visit the Bill Laimbeers of the world. He goes, we're looking for competitive, talented players. So, like, you know, I'm not going to get into name calling. I think that the whole video is silly. And, like, great, he got 6.5 million views, right? Well, like, how many other players have scored 50 goals playing with Connor McDavid?
None.
Well, I mean, oh, it's so easy. Anybody can do it. Well, Draisaitl scored 50, but they were split up. I mean, yeah. Hyman plays with McDavid. Like, well, if it's so easy, like, just go and do it. Zach Hyman is an outstanding player. He's an outstanding person. And Zach Hyman's path was not easy. You can look at the wealth and whatnot. I watched Zach Hyman play at the University of Michigan. He wasn't even able to find his way until he was halfway through his junior year. But they believed in him. He kept working. His last year in Michigan, he was a Hobey Baker finalist. We all know the story from there. Now he's a 50-goal scorer. You want to knock him? I'll tell you what the narrative is. The narrative is about a significant accomplishment. And Andrew Berkshire, your video is bullshit.
So for those who don't know who Stuart Hyman is, or obviously know that he's Zach Hyman's dad, he's a real estate mogul out of Toronto, who obviously did really, really well, and to the point where he bought several hockey teams and he bought a hockey league, and his boys played for those teams. And in that league growing up, he also purchased ISS, International Scouting Service, which ranks hockey prospects going into the draft. But I also know this. I also know that Zach Hyman has four brothers, and I also know they all played hockey, and I also know that none of them never made it to the National Hockey League. There's a lot of owners in the National Hockey League who are very, very wealthy, and they have boys who play hockey. They never made it to the National Hockey League either. I don't know what prompted Andrew to do that video yesterday. I guess he was, you know, and he even said it's probably going to upset some people. So he was probably looking for a reaction. He was probably trying to get some people's attention. I don't know what his work situation is like and whether or not he was, you know, auditioning for something, but it was ill-advised. It really was. It was really off the mark. It's unfortunate that he did that video, because I think that video is going to haunt him for a very, very long time. And if there's one thing, and I'm far from perfect, believe me when I tell you this, but if there's one thing I learned years ago, is that if you say something that the entire world doesn't agree with, chances are you're wrong. And if you're wrong, you say you're wrong, or you apologize for what you did or what you said. Instead, late last night, early this morning, he doubled down with another video, double the time and length, trying to basically explain at more length what he was trying to say. And he just made it worse for himself. Like he made it worse. Matthew Barnaby put out a video earlier today where he really took it to Andrew, really got into some of the name calling, and that's his prerogative. But he had some comments which I thought were pretty spot on when he said, Zach Hyman comes from a wealthy family. Well, a lot of times wealthy kids are entitled. Wealthy kids don't feel like they have to go out and work very hard because their life is already set up for them. They don't need to become a professional hockey player. So the fact that this guy goes out and works harder than most, doesn't that tell you everything you need to know about his character? And I thought those were some pretty spot-on comments, but it just... If you want to say to people that hockey's become an expensive sport and not every family can afford it, and there's a lot of talented kids who probably, you know, could use a few extra bucks, that's a fair statement. That's true. Costs a lot of money to buy skates. Costs a lot of money to buy a hockey stick. But if you're going to put that and Zach Hyman's success all in the same video, and then once again talk about the fact that Hyman only does one thing, I'll tell you, Mike Kelly of the NHL Network and Sports Logic, who I really enjoy his work, he said that Zach Hyman last night had 7 chances in the inner slot. Like, that's him getting to the inner slot. He's so far ahead of any other player in the National Hockey League. You know what, Craig? Going to the inner slot, it hurts to go there. And there's not a lot of players that want to go there. And he goes, and yes, it's true that when he goes there, McDavid puts the puck on his stick. But it's also true that he scores some goals on his own. And it's also true that, you know what? You get hit there, you get slashed there, and you might even lose a tooth there. So I don't know what prompted him to do that video, but, and I don't know what prompted him to double down, but.
I'll finish with this. You know?
Yeah.
When you want to assail.
It's too bad.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, but there was a lot, like talking about Zach Hyman, talking about wealthy people, talking about the media, right? And he used the word BS. Like, he used it. So he went after a lot of group of people. Zach Hyman is a high character quality, hardworking, yes, 50 goal scorer in the National Hockey League that every team in the league would love to have on their team. That's number one. And I'll finish with this. It's a quote from Einstein, and it never gets old. Einstein said the difference between genius and stupidity, genius has its limits.
Yeah, that's one of your favorites, too, because I think you posted that or you reposted that a couple
of times. Oh, I do all the time. Oh, I do it all the time. I follow
your Twitter account, too.
It doesn't get old. That quote I'll tell is you a this. Great quote.
When you start off your video, too, taking issue with the media and basically saying, I've been in the media since 2012, and the media is not doing their job, not only in sports, but in general. If you work in the sports media, for example, and you're the best insider in the game, and you want to take issue with media, go for it. If you work in hockey and you're one of the best talent evaluators in the game or a director of scouting like yourself, and you want to take issue with the media, go for it. If you're one of the top sports analysts or one of the top hockey analysts or one of the top radio hosts or one of the top podcasters in all of hockey, like me, yes, you want to take issue with the media, go for it. But for him to take an issue with the media, it's just he put too many people against him. Oh, yeah. From the start of his video to the end of his video. And look, it's really unfortunate. I do not take pleasure, me personally, in bad days at the office for people. I live in a world where I want to see everyone do well. I want to see myself do well 1,000%. Do I want to see myself being the best I can be and making the most money possible and having the best ratings? 1,000%. But I live in a world where I want to see everyone do well so they can put as much food on the table for their family, provide vacations for their family every year, and everyone can live comfortable. So I don't take pleasure in the last 24 hours or 36 hours for Andrew. But I it's just he put too many people against them from start to finish, tied in too many things together. And look, if he wanted to get people's attention, unfortunately he got it. But I think it's safe to say that it's probably not the attention that he was looking for. You know, it's too bad.
Yeah, you're right. But he made his bed. He's going to have to lay in it.
And I think I'm going to make my bed now because it's time for bed. Time flies when you're having fun, Craig. I mentioned this earlier on. I actually got involved in the chat with those who were chatting on YouTube Live. And I said, it's just so easy to talk to Craig Button. It seems like the conversation is fluid and that we can go on forever. So it's pretty amazing. Look, unfortunately, we didn't get 6.5 million views. And I don't think we will, but I have a feeling that most people are going to agree with what we had to say tonight, because I think that they were all pretty well thought out comments.
Yeah. 67 minutes. It goes by fast when you're having fun. And I thank you, my friend.
You're right about that. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much again, Craig Button, TSN Director of Scouting and Hockey Analyst. Have a great night, Craig.
You too.
All right, there you have it, Craig Button. Once again, if you liked it, like it, share it with your friends. Comment sick, S-I-C-K, S-I-C-K. It would be pretty awesome if this video can get 6.5 million views, by the way, or 6.5 million impressions on Twitter. I'd be really happy with that. But anyway, if not, it's okay. You know, we're in it for the long run. Okay, special thanks to Energy Transportation Group. Special thanks to Labitta TB. Special thanks to Playground. Special thanks to Accent Insurance Solutions, and special thanks to all of you watching our Sick Army, our Sick community, loyal, engaging from start to finish there every day, every night, 12 months a year. Love you all. Let's keep it going. We'll be back tomorrow night, same time, same place, right after your Montreal Canadiens, of course, who are going to be in action tomorrow night. As the Montreal Canadiens will host John Tortorella and the Philadelphia Flyers. We'll be back tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern, live for Agnello, Sammy, and Juliana at Master Control. They're Cavallaro. I'm Marinaro. Have a good night.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination.